Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We hope you are having a wonderful start to your week. We hope you had a wonderful Mother's Day. I can speak for my wife. She had an excellent Mother's Day. I'm husband of the year.
There you go. That's what you strive for.
Did somebody vote?
Oh, yeah. He did.
And the vote was 1-0 for you.
Absolutely. It'd have been terrible if it was the other way around.
Could you imagine him just voting for, I didn't really do so well this year. I'm going to vote someone else.
Eliza abstained.
Mm-hmm.
And Arlo abstained?
I guess Arlo also abstained. Yeah. So it was just me voting.
Yes,
but no complaints from the wife. Hopefully all of the moms in your life had a wonderful Mother's Day weekend. And we have a fun show planned. John Glennon of the Nashville Post will join us at 3:40. Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter, will join us at 4:20. We'll get into the Titans, of course. Some Predators as well. I do want to start the show quickly. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this. I do want to start the show quickly on the latest Mike Vrabel, Diana Russini story. And folks, we are scraping the bottom of the barrel at this point. TMZ published a story earlier today with the headline, Diana Russini wraps arm around Mike Vrabel, chatting it up at 2022 Super Bowl party. Oh, my God. Look, I get it. It's driving clicks. It's driving engagement. But I'm sorry. Someone putting their arm around somebody else at a loud party is not worth a banner headline, guys.
Why not? I mean, come on.
Do you want me to read the story?
This is the world we live in. Come on.
Everybody
wants the juice.
I know.
No, I'm just playing. See, Willie even wants the juice. He was like,
you know what they say? The darker the berry,
the sweeter the juice.
Damn straight. Here it is from TMZ. And this is why I'm saying they're scraping the bottom of the barrel at this point. Mike Vrabel and Diana Russini kept it pretty professional in front of their NFL peers at a post-award show party before the 2022 Super Bowl. And TMZ has photos from the event. The two were spotted hugging at a VIP party at the Forum in LA before Super Bowl, whichever Super Bowl. I'm not doing the Roman numerals. With Russini leaning in close to talk to the head coach. Check out the photo. Russini's hand is on Vrabel's back as she speaks into his ear, though it could just be she needed to cut through the noise as the band Kings of Leon performed. All right, guys. Is there something here, or is it just people are paying for photos of Mike Vrabel and Diana Russini in any sort of situation?
Nah, this is what was planned.
Do we need a dirty Diana sounder every time we talk about Mike Vrabel and Diana Russini? Okay, we'll work on it.
She was like, they playing our song. That's what she was whispering in his ear.
I'm not sure Kings of Leon could do dirty Diana justice.
That was playing in her head. Probably not. That was playing in her head. Nah, man, it's all.
We're scraping the bottom of the barrel, folks.
Hey, they're going to keep on delivering. We got to keep on answering.
So we'll see if something actually newsworthy happens this week. Frankly, I know I could speak for both of my co-hosts here, I think. I definitely for Willie, maybe for Derek.
Yeah.
We're kind of sick of it, but the more things come out, the more we're going to keep talking about it. But I saw that today from TMZ, and I'm like, guys, I know you're trying to drive engagement. We can do better. We can do better. But I do want to talk about something that happened in actual sports over the weekend. The Vandy boys at Missouri, this Fog Saga, which I'm calling the FAGA. Friday night, Willie, you tell me if I'm setting the scene correctly. Friday night, Vanderbilt's playing at Missouri. The fog is so dense that if you watch broadcast footage of the game, I'm surprised you can see anything. The fog is so dense at Missouri, you can barely see a thing. Vanderbilt is up 6-1 in the game. They blow it. The Commodores are down 7-6. And in the top of the ninth, Braden Holcomb comes up to bat. Runners on first and second. Launches one. He thinks it's gone. The umpires decide it's a ground rule double. So instead of Vanderbilt going up two, it's a tie game. The game is suspended at 7-7. It concludes the following day. Missouri wins 8-7 in extras. But the data, the TrackMan data, clearly it's a home run. I believe it was like 379 feet or something like that. But the umpires decided it's a ground rule double. My question for Willie Donick, did the Vandy boys get hosed on Friday?
Yeah, 100%. They got a raw deal on that. That is just a bad call. But look, it's the fog was really dense. I mean, you have to see the clip. Do you remember years ago, Derek?
This is Philadelphia.
That's right. The Philadelphia.
Chicago. Was it Chicago?
Yeah, the Eagles and the Bears at Soldier Field in the fog.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened once or twice since then, maybe in the regular season, but that playoff game, everybody remembers just for that reason. Like the cameras, you couldn't see the players from the regular cameras. They had to have a camera on the sideline just to have any clue what was happening in the game. They kept playing. And they didn't play much longer after this hit by Holcomb because, you know, if the ball goes up in the air, there's no way any of the guys are going to see it. So why they were still playing at that point, I'm not sure, but they were. And, yeah, I think the thing that was frustrating for me is it appeared that one of the umpires ruled it a home run.
Mm-hmm.
It was ruled a home run on the field, and they overturned it. Based on what? That's what I don't understand. Is if you're – there was an umpire that you could see on the field signaling home run,
mm-hmm.
and they then overturned it to a double. So that was, it's a bad call, no matter what you, and I think over the course of the night, special circumstances, you can't tell me that there's a precedent for a play like that. I don't see why you can't logically, over the course of the evening and the next morning, say, you know what, there's all this evidence that's pointing towards this is clearly a home run.
So the TrackMan data had the ball traveling 379 feet, which would have indicated a home run to that part of the stadium. An SEC spokesperson told the Tennessean, quote, during the top of the ninth with runners on first and second base, the batter hit a ball to right center field that was difficult to locate due to poor visibility. Upon conferring as a crew, the umpires ruled that the play was a ground rule double, scoring the runner from second base. After video review, the call on the field was upheld as no video evidence was available to overturn the call due to low visibility.
Well, I guess that's the debate, is why did they switch when one of the umpires signaled home run?
Mm-hmm.
When they, because it seems like they're falling back on the call on the field, which now you're telling me they had determined was a ground rule double?
I just think this is a big blunder by the SEC and in the umpires. That's like saying, well, since the wind was blowing really hard, we're not going to call that a home run because if the wind wasn't blowing hard, then the ball wouldn't have went out of the park. Well, that's a part of the element. If you, in this situation, if you didn't take time out to stop the game prior to any of this and you felt, okay, these guys can go on, you can't then determine, well, because it was too much fog, even though the chip in the computer tells you that it went further than what the actual guy would have been able to try to track the ball, it's telling you it went further, but you come back after discussing and say, no, it's not a home run. That is the most asinine thing that I've ever heard. It really is. It's like, isn't a situation like this one of those situations that either as the game is going on, you realize we need to stop the game? Because I'm sure that wasn't the only point where the ball was a little bit difficult to see. So because you couldn't see it, but you clearly know it went in the, out of the stadium, you get together, huddle together, and y'all make the determination that, oh, it's a ground rule double and not a home run. That is the most – it's not like somebody reached over and grabbed the ball and then took it. We've seen that happen. Okay, that's a ground rule. But how in the hell are you going to declare a ground rule double when it says the ball went completely, basically out of the park?
I mean, I'm looking at a screenshot of Braden Holcomb's at-bat that led to the ground rule double. I can't even see Holcomb on the screen. This is a screenshot of the broadcast. You can't even see the batter. I can only imagine what it was like on the field, but this is what it looked like on TV. So I can only imagine what it looked like in person.
Well, in person, it probably was a little bit clearer, or lower to the ground. But obviously, when the ball gets up in the air, that's when camera shots like that shows you from the aerial view how dense it is. But on the field, it's probably not as dense. But even with that, if you know that, why don't you stop the game before that? You just don't take a blatant home run and you say, well, that's not a home run. Not because somebody touched the ball, nothing else, but the fog was too deep. Well, if it wasn't a home run, it would have landed right in the park.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that could have happened, of course, they obviously didn't see it either way. It could have bounced over the fence and ended up over there, but I think the TrackMan is pretty accurate, and I agree with you. That at that point, I don't know how the outfielders would have seen any fly ball. It could have been a pop fly right to the center fielder, and I'm guessing he would not have been able to see the ball in those conditions. So why they were still playing at that point, I'm not sure. But it's just a shame. It's just, you know, it's par for the course the way the season has gone for Vanderbilt. They just have not – nothing has gone right from injuries, et cetera. They've lost some close games like this. So that was a bitter pill to swallow because the weekend did not get a whole lot better after that. They ended up losing 2 out of 3. It's not looking good right now for them. But, I guess you watch baseball long enough. This is one of the things that you enjoy about the game. When you think you've seen everything in a baseball game, something else comes up that you've never, ever seen before.
I got a laugh out of a post from Dylan Tovitz, who writes for Vandy on SI. He said, quote, "The SEC picked the wrong school to hand a physics assignment to in order to decide a baseball game." that is very true. It was reminiscent of what happened in the regional last year, right? Between Vanderbilt and Wright State. Wasn't there a home run that was ruled a foul ball that was overturned to a home run? Vanderbilt ended up winning that game. They did not win the series, but they ended up winning that game, right? That came to mind to me as I was watching this.
And those are more common. Like down the line, there always will probably be, unless you can get like a laser beam that points up from the foul pole. I mean, I'm sure there's things that maybe can be done. But on occasion, even, you know, in the major leagues, there are times where a fair or foul is going to be debated, or you need a really good camera shot of it. You don't always have it, especially if the ball goes up above the level of where the foul pole ends.
Man, they got so much technology. There's no excuse for stuff like this, honestly, really. There is no excuse for not knowing where the ball goes, if it's foul, if it's not foul, if it would have been a home run. There's too much technology out there that can save you from situations like this. You track balls on any other situation, but you're not going to track the ball on this situation and take that for what it's worth.
Vanderbilt now 29-24 on the season, 11-16 in SEC play after losing 2 of 3 at Missouri. The Vandy boys have one more series left against South Carolina at Hawkins Field Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and then the SEC tournament. So we'll see if Vanderbilt can bounce back, because it's been, what, Willie, 20 years, you said, since Vanderbilt did not qualify for the College World Series?
2005 was the last year that they did not make the tournament.
So these next few games, this upcoming series against South Carolina and the SEC tournament, they're huge for the Vandy boys. 615-737-1025. I saw the conditions at Missouri, the fog so thick you couldn't even see the batter on the broadcast. And yet Vanderbilt hits a home run that should have probably been a home run that ends up being a ground rule double. And Missouri ends up winning the game in extras 8-7. 615 937-1025. We will take your thoughts on that. I believe we have a caller, Big O, who wants his thought, wants us to hear his thoughts on that. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I was watching that game, and in the eighth, top of the eighth, and to the middle of the eighth, when Missouri was batting, that's when the ball came in. And they said that they talked to the coaches, and they wanted to continue it. Now, listen, that's just announcers. But that couldn't be a coach's decision. The umpires had to see what was happening and stop that game after eight. And that Vanderbilt never should have been allowed to bat. And so that's my only problem. Why on earth did they continue that in such a terrible condition? It had to be stopped at the end of eight. They decided to play another ninth inning later. That ends all this drama that you're talking about right now. But the right thing didn't happen. Thank you for taking my call. Y'all have a blessed day.
You as well.
Thank you. Appreciate it. If that is indeed, I mean, listen, they had opportunities to stop the game if they chose to. And once you – tell me if you agree with this, Willie. Once you go to the coaches and the coaches say, all right, we want to play, then everything is off the table. Like, you just – they know you can't – hey, if the coaches want to play, we're going to play. Then you can't go and say, well, that's not a home run. Well, the coaches said play.
That's an interesting point. If that happened, then, yeah, I guess you're understanding that a play like that is likely to happen. I can see it. Like, you're so close to the end of the game. You're like, we don't want to come back out here and resume this game when we're so close to ending the game. But I don't know. It just from the TV angles, it's all you can go by from where we sit. It just didn't seem like you should be playing. Like, when you can't see the batter.
Precisely.
Like, I'm sure the batter could see the pitch. The pitcher could see the catcher and the hitter. But I would be concerned with anything hit up in the air. How in the world would anybody see?
615-737-1025. Coming up next, the NFL schedule will be released on Thursday. Once again, we know who the Titans are playing next season. But the order of opponents will be released on Thursday. But I do have another question about the Titans schedule. No, it's not about primetime games this time. It's about something else related to the Titans schedule. 615-737-1025. The 615 Open Golf Tournament might be sold out, but you can bid on all kinds of awesome experiences to directly support Folds of Honor at 615open.com/auction. Have an unforgettable time while supporting a great cause. That's 615open.com/auction. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025. The game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. James on our text line says, if I'm not mistaken, I think I heard that someone in the stands in the outfield got the ball that was hit by Vanderbilt on that play. I actually saw it was Joey Dwyer on SI.com spoke to a Vanderbilt fan who was at the game who said, quote, no doubt, I have the ball and took a pick of it at the park. I thought it was gone too. The bullpen said it cleared the fence and Trackman had it going 380 and the fence in that part of the park is 366. I found it at the foot of the indoor football facility out past the right field fence.
There was a lot of evidence. I saw that the next morning, too. There was a lot of time to look at all these things in the league office and say, you know, let's get this right. All right. So I'm just curious, the protocols, this is, I'm sure, not something that has been seen before. But the curious thing in that replay is how quickly the TrackMan data was up. It was up right away. I mean, while they were reviewing it, said 379. It even had the launch angle. Like, that is simple physics, right? You can deduce. And I think without, you know, I guess you can't say it's 100% certain because you can't see it with your own eyes, but every single piece of evidence points to that ball being a home run. But, you know, it's unfortunate. But I'm sure as a competitor, if you're Vanderbilt, you're like, well, you were up 6-1. It shouldn't have gotten to that point, right? And still could have won the game the next day. Yeah, I get all that. It's just unfortunate. It's just the way the season has gone.
Do they have the ability to track something like that, because I'm sure on foul balls, whether it be through video or they have some way of tracking where that ball goes.
I don't know how they do it, mm-hmm. but now at a major league game, like if a guy hits a home
exit
run,
exit velocity and launch angle,
and you have it immediately.
But that's what I'm saying. Things because that have, the umps have if they need to go to it or
see,
anybody.
That's the thing about it is, it's there for the fans. Like mm-hmm. everybody in the park can see these things. They can track every pitch, and at some big league parks, you'll see how much a ball broke. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll see a slider, and it'll say X amount of inches horizontal break or something like that. Most people don't care, right? It's like, was it a strike? Was it a ball? Was it good for our team? But they have all of this data. But I guess this is the I've never really thought about it using that data to make a call on the field. I don't know if the umpires have the ability to check the data.
So
evidently they don't, because if they did, I think they would have ruled it a home run.
So they do not have, like the major leagues, the pitch cam, so you know exactly where the pitches went, and if it's disputable, you go back to the camera and you see, well, it's telling you if it's inside, outside.
Well, you know, in Major League Baseball now, you can challenge a ball or a strike for the first time, which is what they've been doing in the minors. The mm-hmm. Sounds have done it for the last couple of years, and I think it's working pretty well. It's a good improvement.
They don't have that in college.
They don't have it in college yet. Maybe the big
Nick just said they'll have it during the SEC tournament.
Yeah. Oh, the SEC tournament they're doing. Okay. Well, that's good. It's interesting how the teams will have to figure out how to use it the best way, not overdo it, because mm-hmm. if you lose challenges, you could be out of them, and then you miss a chance to challenge a call big mm-hmm. late in the game. But this is the way the game has gone. The advances in technology can tell you a whole lot more than we used to know watching a baseball game.
On Thursday, the NFL schedule will be released. Everybody get excited again. I don't understand the excitement around the NFL schedule release, because we know who the Titans and the other teams are playing.
Two games.
You think two primetime games. You've thought about this over the weekend.
Yeah.
If you missed it on Friday, Derek Mason said he thinks the Titans are going to get three primetime games.
I said two,
well,
three.
Well, he said two flex. Scheduled,
yes.
One flex.
Yes.
Willie thinks Derek is nuts. Willie says zero.
I'm going to say zero.
I'm going to meet you in the middle, sort of, and say one. But that's not what we're talking about. So we'll see the actual schedule, the order of games the Titans are playing, the opponents, etc. We'll find that out on Thursday. But Warren Sharp, at his website, does this exercise every year. He uses projected win totals from Vegas odd makers to determine strength of schedule in the NFL, which I think is, quite frankly, a smarter way of doing it versus looking at a team's record last season, because that doesn't take into account the changes every team has made. So based on projected win totals for this season, Warren Sharp has the Tennessee Titans with the 13th easiest schedule. 13th easiest. Remember that number. A year ago, doing the same exercise, Warren Sharp had the Titans with the 8th easiest schedule. And I think we can all agree it wasn't an easy schedule for the Tennessee Titans last season.
Well,
I think Warren Sharp, based on his calculations, determined that the Titans had the hardest strength of schedule by the end of the season. The Titans played 10 of 17 games last season against teams that made the playoffs. They went 0-10 in those games, by the way. But the Titans 0-10 versus playoff teams last season. So here's what I'm wondering, Derek Mason. Mm-hmm. Will the Titans' schedule actually be easier this season? Context. Once we have the actual schedule, we'll be able to talk about when the Titans' bye week is and rest advantages, short weeks, all of those things. Home versus road, long road trips, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But just based on the schedule itself, do we think the Titans' schedule will actually be easier this season? Because last year, it was supposed to be, and it was anything but.
It's hard to say that. Or it's hard to look at the games. I'm not even talking about where they're playing them, obviously, or what time they're playing them. Obviously, we know what their home games and their away games are, but we don't know when they're going to play and what time and everything else, or what time of year they're going to play specific teams. But if you look at their schedule, I mean, it's still a hard schedule. I mean, you got the Houston Texans, the Jacksonville Jaguars, both of them were playoff team. Philadelphia was a playoff team. So you have those teams. Jacksonville, playoff team. Baltimore, playoff team, if I'm not mistaken. Did Dallas get in the playoffs? Detroit got in the playoffs.
Detroit missed the playoffs.
Detroit missed. Dallas got in.
Same with Baltimore. Baltimore missed the playoffs as well.
Okay, so Baltimore missed. But if you look at this and then project, how have these teams better? Because we can say, well, Baltimore had a bunch of injuries last year. All right, that's one reason they didn't make the playoffs. Cincinnati had a bunch of injuries last year. Now they're coming back fully healthy and a much better defense. The Dallas Cowboys, they've gotten better. The Detroit Lions, they've gotten better, and they're healthier. So if you start looking at these teams, with the exception of probably the Giants, the Vegas Raiders, and the Jets, I think every other team on this schedule looks to be a playoff team, possibly the Browns too. Let's put them out. But so that's four teams. Four teams out of the rest of these teams. Well, what is it? 13 out of the 14? I mean, four out of the 17 are non-playoff teams. The rest of them are eventually going to be playoff teams because they come back healthier.
I have a question, Adam.
Yes.
Where do you think Warren Sharp went wrong in his assessment of the schedule last year?
That's a good question.
Because I think that's what I would like to learn.
Well, the Patriots were a lot better than anticipated.
Well, no, I think we can make all those
– Yes.
We can make all those observations pretty easily. I'm just curious where, like, as he goes back and says, where did I go wrong? Maybe that's just the answer is it's so unpredictable to know in May or June, even with the assessment of the changes that the roster's made. So I don't know. There may not be an answer to the question of
how easy is the schedule. I think a lot of it is injuries.
If you got your schedule in May, and you're playing the Cincinnati Bengals. Mm-hmm. That game, we're like, okay, you got to beat Joe Burrow. That's going to be tough. Well, of course, last year, you may have played the Bengals without Joe Burrow. Exactly. That is 100% different.
Or Kansas City without.
Sure, sure. And that's the Titans beat the Chiefs last year for one reason.
If memory serves, the three teams that most exceeded their preseason win totals last season. The Titans played all three teams. New England, Seattle, and Jacksonville. Twice. Mm-hmm. So that probably has something to do with it. And a quick glance looking at their opponents this season, the teams that made the playoffs last year. Houston, Jacksonville, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and I think that's it.
That's four.
Baltimore did not make the playoffs. Mm-mm. Cincinnati did not make the playoffs.
Did Dallas make the playoffs?
Dallas did not make the playoffs. Okay. Detroit did not make the playoffs. The Raiders did not make the playoffs. And the Giants did not make the playoffs.
Okay, but would we say that it's hard from year to year? There's always some unexpected teams that are good, like the Patriots last year, right? Would be, and even the Seahawks. I don't think anybody had the Patriots or Seahawks as even contenders for the Super Bowl,
Remember, it was one of the unlikeliest Super Bowls ever based on projected win totals at the beginning of the season.
So the league already, year in and year out, has that element of surprise, the element of parity. And on top of that, there are, 10 new head coaches? So 10 completely different coaching staffs. And how about this? 21 new offensive coordinators.
That'll do it.
So how do you know how it's going to go? Like, I think it's probably harder than ever to predict.
But a lot of this boils down to injury.
That's another one that you cannot predict, right?
If you get into the season playing, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs at the beginning of the season was different playing the Kansas City Chiefs toward the end of the season. Playing Cincinnati at the beginning of the season is different from playing Cincinnati at the end of the season. Baltimore is the same way. So, honestly, a lot of this, because if you look at this, if you look at each team each year, you know what teams have gotten better and you know what teams haven't. But a lot of it boils down to, well, Kansas City's, their fortunes lie where? In their quarterback's hands. And if he comes back and he's healthy, everybody predicts they will be right back where they were two seasons ago in the playoffs. You figure if, and I know a lot of this is if, but Lamar Jackson stays healthy more so toward the end of the season than anything, then everybody predicts the Baltimore Ravens in the playoffs, along with Kansas City, Cincinnati Bengals in the playoffs. So we can say right now, yeah, they got the 11th easiest schedule. But then once you get into the season, you start coming down to playing these games. It's like, man, the quarterback's still the quarterback, and they're playing much better. So that easy schedule, as we saw last year, quickly becomes a hard schedule once you get into the season.
615-737-1025. Will the Titans' schedule actually be easier this season? The Titans' schedule was supposed to be easy last season. Warren Sharp had it as the eighth easiest in the NFL before last season. It ended up being, I think, the hardest schedule based on Sharp's analysis. The Titans now have the 13th easiest schedule based on opponents' projected win totals. Will the Titans' schedule actually be easier? We'll know. We'll find out on Thursday. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, John Glennon of the Nashville Post will join us. We'll talk about the Titans' schedule and more about the local professional football and hockey teams with our friend John Glennon coming up next. 615-737-1025. Speaking of us here at 1025, Chase and Big Joe will be broadcasting live this Wednesday at Nash Dogs at 1427 Robinson Road. Nash Dogs now serving at their Old Hickory Cafe, plus catering, corporate events, and food truck bookings. Find out more at nashdogs.com. You can stop by and win tickets to see Nashville Smash take on the Boston Butchers in the Team Boxing League at Municipal Auditorium on May 23rd. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Later, I'll explain the theme of the playlist today. But let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend John Glennon of the Nashville Post. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are doing well. So, John, as you know, get excited. On Thursday, we will find out the Titans' schedule. Derek Mason, the very same, the one sitting to my right, thinks the Titans are going to get two scheduled primetime games. Two questions.
Wow.
One, is Derek nuts? And two, do you think the Titans have any chance of ending up on primetime at least once this season?
I have a feeling, unfortunately, that the Titans will get two less than Derek is predicting right now would be my guess.
Zero, FYI.
If they give Vegas a game.
I think you're only two off. I think that's I just feel like, you know, last year to me was the year that the Titans were even, you know, maybe even kind of a little bit of a sexier pick for at least one game because Cam Ward was fresh off being pick number one. You know, you had that poll. Usually the number one guy gets a primetime showing. This year, you know, kind of the bloom is off the rose a little bit with Cam Ward. And he's not fresh off being number one. And you look at the Titans, and there's just not a whole lot of sexiness about this team, you know, with the win-loss record for years, kind of the lack of marquee stars. And to me, if they didn't get one last year, I think they're even less likely, honestly, to get one this year.
John, before you came on, we were discussing another element of the Titans' schedule. Last season, the Titans were supposed to have an easy schedule. It ended up being the hardest schedule by some metrics. 10 games against playoff teams, a lot of really tough defenses that Cam Ward had to face in his first year. And we'll know more once we see the order of games, but will the Titans' schedule actually be easier this season, you think?
I don't think it'll be as easy as it looks, you know, right off. I think we go through this, you know, debate every sort of off season in the NFL because teams change so radically in the NFL from one year to another. It's really not the best measurement just to say, okay, so-and-so had a bad record last year, therefore they're going to be a bad team coming into this year. I kind of like the way that, you know, the last few years, some of the analytics websites have gone to the projected wins model in terms of trying to figure out the strength of schedule. And if you do that with the Titans this year, well, all of a sudden they go from, you know, the eighth easiest schedule using the old formula to the 13th hardest using more of the new formula. And I lean towards more of that, honestly. It's at least an attempt to factor into all the things that go on to an NFL team during the offseason and how much different they are from the way they finished last year.
Now, come on, John. Not even one game, man, you don't think? Okay,
They may give him a little sympathy, say, hey, we didn't have you on last year. We'll bring you in this year.
They give him another preseason game?
Yeah, that's right.
Throw him a Thursday nighter. Exactly. Come on, why not?
No, but if you're looking at it, and I'm not saying that you're not, but I'm trying to, you know, fast forward this thing because obviously the Titans are in line to potentially get a Super Bowl here, and we know it's going more than likely it will happen than not. They just hadn't, you know, put it out there just yet. But if you're the NFL and you have a team with a young quarterback that you have seen has developed, because we're always talking about developing these young quarterbacks. And if you're the NFL, you know in the next four or five years, there's going to be a Super Bowl there in Nashville. They got a young quarterback. They went out and got a young wide receiver. And they're looking at this team and what they added. I would almost think that the NFL would want to put them on now. I'd say at least two, but at least one game on prime time outside of a Thursday night game.
I mean, that's certainly a fair argument. There's no doubt about that. I think, you know, if the Arizona Cardinals don't pick Jeremiah Love and he's there and the Titans pick him at number four, I think that marquee value lands you at least one primetime game right there. I'm not sure that Carnell Tate has quite the marquee value that Jeremiah Love does. And I also think, I agree with you that certainly, you know, Nashville is going to be getting a Super Bowl at some point. But, you know, when are they going to open that new stadium? It's not going to be in 2026. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in 2027. So you may lean more towards, you know, a primetime game there, hoping that you get a better team as well. And then, as I said, maybe if you're the NFL, you know, there's no rule, as there used to be, where you have to have a primetime game, at least one for each team. But on the other hand, if you pass over the Titans last year, as the NFL did, maybe you say to them this year, okay, you know, we're going to throw you at least a bone for passing you over last year. Well, that way we'll give you at least one game. So maybe you'll be only one game off, Derek.
Okay, with that being said, do you think the NFL should go back to – and I get it on why they – probably more than likely chose not to do it because of ratings. But hey, listen, the money's in the bag now. The NFL has the money. People are going to watch no matter what. But you think they should go back to every team having at least one primetime game? I think it would be better for the sport to continue to, even if your team is bad that 1 year or 2 years, they at least get an opportunity to be on television because you're promoting your sport.
I mean, I think it would be great for individual fan bases. I mean, obviously, Nashville, you know, wants to see, you know, the Titans play a primetime game or two. I get that. You want to feel a little sense of pride. You want to feel that you're being looked at around the league. On the other hand, there's probably 31 markets or so that say, I'd rather not see the Tennessee Titans on primetime next year. So I get that also. You know, honestly, there have been, you know, I can think of in past years when they did have that rule in place. I think we can all remember some clunkers when both the Titans and Jaguars were very bad teams, and it seemed like you had to give them that Thursday night game one time a year. So I don't know. Yeah, I think it's good for individual fan bases, but does that get outweighed by the larger mass of fan bases that say, I'd rather not. I'd rather see contenders play in prime time every single time.
Now, we talk about hard divisions within this NFL, and we can go to AFC North, things like that, or the NFC. But the way that I'm looking at it now, the NFC, the AFC South, can this potentially be one of those up for grabs? Not because everyone is bad, because everyone is good.
Could be. You know, I think obviously the Titans are going to have to take a significant step forward, you know, from where they were last year. And you know, maybe you get that natural bump at the quarterback position that we've seen a lot of quarterbacks take in the second year. Indianapolis, maybe if they have Daniel Jones for a full season, all of a sudden they're a much better team. They were certainly very good with him when he was a quarterback. And we know Jacksonville was a good team last year. I think Liam Cohen has turned out to be a really good coach, at least for 1 year. And obviously Houston's going to be great with that defense every year. So I think, you know, right now you're looking at Houston and probably Jacksonville as sort of the main contenders. Mm-hmm. But Indy, you know, again, a full year of Daniel Jones could do some things. And then the Titans, I say, you know, I don't think they're going to be contending, honestly, for the division. But, you know, if you get a leap forward again, maybe a better offensive coordinator, maybe a better game plan. You know, Cam Ward has a much better year all of a sudden. You know, you're at least, chalking up a few wins and you're relevant in the division. Mm-hmm.
Talking to John Glennon. So, John, let's switch to hockey. Tonight, really big game for Minnesota, who has crept back within 2-1 against the Avalanche, who look like they are just out of this world right now. The atmosphere was pretty awesome in St. Paul the other day. I'm curious to see if they can tie this thing up.
Yeah, I think a little bit of the problem anyway is certainly the goaltending situation for Colorado. We'll see if they figure that out. You know, Jared Bednar has said, you know, we've got a decision to make. And the former Preds goalie, of course, Scott Wedgwood, was great throughout the regular season. Has not looked as good in the playoffs. And maybe they decide to make the switch on more of a permanent basis going into game four. I still think, you know, like you said, the atmosphere was tremendous in Minnesota. You know, I think Minnesota gets it as they did at least one win, you know, primarily because of that. But I just feel like that talent pool overall for the Avalanche is going to be too much for the Wild. I'd still say give me the Wild give me the Avalanche in six games or so.
Yeah, they're gonna need Kaprizov and Quinn Hughes to play out of their mind, kind of like they did the other night. John, you brought up something, though, that I think is something to watch in the playoffs going forward. You have a lot of teams now that during the course of the regular season, they split the duties. Wedgwood and Mackenzie Blackwood is a good example for Colorado, even Minnesota with their two goalies, and there's other teams that did the same thing. But the tradition says basically you ride the same guy as long as he's playing well. But I'm curious how that gets challenged or continues to get challenged when you have a 2-month run to the Stanley Cup and you're asking somebody to do something they haven't done all year. So it doesn't surprise me at all that Wedgwood sort of hit a wall there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, that pattern is a little bit less, you know, maybe in the last couple of years in terms of, okay, we've got to pick our number one and go with them. I think we've seen a little bit less of that in the playoffs in the last couple of years. And, yeah, it only makes sense. You know, I can't remember exactly how many games Scott Wedgwood played. What was it, probably 50 or something like that, or maybe not even that much during the regular season. But, yeah, he's not used to going in there every other night at this point. So, you know, he's going to struggle a little bit. And you know, I think it only makes sense to me that idea that you stick with one no matter what, you know, is one of those old school kind of things that's generally, you know, starting to fade away a little bit as we've seen a lot of things in the NHL the last few years. So, you know, I really wouldn't be surprised if we see some more switches coming up.
John Glennon of the Nashville Post has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Nobody knows about all of the sports in Nashville, Tennessee, better than our friend John Glennon. John, as always, a pleasure. We'll catch up soon.
Enjoy it, guys. Thank you.
615-737-1025. Always glad to hear from Glennon. By the way, as I mentioned, I'm in charge of the playlist today.
Okay.
I was feeling nostalgic earlier, so I was listening to songs that EA Sports featured on Madden like 20 years ago. So earlier I played Andrew WK. That was AFI coming back from break. There will be more.
Okay.
But I put myself in my like 13-year-old headspace, which was a strange headspace. 13-year-old Adam. I'm not sure I really want to go back there, But there was some good music. So that's the playlist today. Old EA tracks from Madden games from like 2002, 2003. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, let's switch gears briefly to the Nashville Predators. Because last week, we had Jeff Marek from Daily Faceoff on the show. And he said that he believes that the Predators GM job is Tom Fitzgerald's position to lose. So let's look at Tom Fitzgerald's resume. Forget about the first captain in franchise history thing. Put that to the side. I looked at Tom Fitzgerald's resume, and I will share my findings coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.